against the Guardians in Cleveland, postponed because of unplayable field conditions. Tonight, the Brewers play the Dodgers in L.A., Cubs meet the Cardinals in St. Louis, the White Sox meet the Royals in Kansas City. That's a day game. The forecast today, mostly sunny and warm, a high heading for 79. We're getting there slowly but surely. Right now, wind northwest at 5. We have sunshine and 68 degrees in both Racine and Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Welcome you to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We are going to be talking about poetry today, and I'm so happy about that because poetry, of course, is such an important and interesting field and something that just about all of us have dabbled in at one time or another. And we're going to be talking about poetry today and specifically the Kenosha Racine Poets Laureate Program. As a matter of fact, we have two Poets Laureate in our live, in our studio today. First of all, Joe Engel, who is the Kenosha Poet Laureate at the moment, and Deborah Hall, who is the Racine Poet Laureate. And Jennifer Koslow is with us as well. She's actually the branch manager for the Northside Library of the Kenosha Public Library, and she serves as president of the Poets Laureate Board of Directors. And so we're going to be finding out from all three of them about this Poets Laureate program and about kind of the wonderful creative avenue that poetry is for them. So we welcome all three of you to the morning show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having us.
Glad we can have this conversation. So Jennifer, maybe we could start with you and get a little bit of a historical sketch about the Poets Laureate program, your understanding of it anyway.
Sure. Well, this program was established back in 2011, so we actually had our 10-year anniversary last year, kind of still a bit in lockdown at that point, but we celebrated the best we could. And basically, we have a poet each every 2 years is our term. We have a poet for Racine County and a poet for Kenosha County. And then with everything going on with the pandemic, we actually expanded our current term to 3 years. So Deborah and Joe have both been with us for 3 years. And then it's kind of evolved over time, but our poets work on a community service project and they read in the community and generally try to act as ambassadors for poetry and the power of the written word to our communities.
Hmm. So we certainly hear about our country's Poet Laureate. I think at most points in our, at least recent history, we have had someone designated as Poet Laureate. But otherwise, is it common for communities or counties to have Poet Laureates?
Yeah, it is pretty common. We have a lovely Wisconsin Poet Laureate right now. And of course, her name is escaping me. But I know in recent months, they just brought in a new Poet Laureate in Milwaukee. There's one in Sheboygan and many other communities in Wisconsin and across the country. Our program, we've also been reached out to by communities in other states asking how we do our program and as they're trying to build their own. So it's becoming, I think, increasingly common, but it is, we have quite a few in Wisconsin.
Fantastic. So tell us what's involved in somebody being designated a Poet Laureate. I mean, how the process works, at least for Kenosha Racine.
Sure. Well, our process is actually open right now. We're looking for our next Poet Laureate for the 23 and 24 year term. And the way that we do that is any applicants send in some samples of their work, and we a cover letter, and they kind of go through and fill out just a general application about who they are so we can get to know them a little bit. And then we keep all of those anonymous, and the board gets together and we review all of the applicants, look at their work, think about what would be a great fit for our communities in the coming couple of years, and then we pick someone, and they come out. And so obviously last time we picked Deborah and Joe, and they have just been phenomenal through everything that has been going on, and every twist and turn things seem to change. Like I mentioned, they have to do a community service project, and trying to navigate through quarantining and shutdowns and everything that happened over the last 3 years, that they've had to kind of jump around all over the place. So
right.
They've done a great job of that.
Yeah, there have been some complications thrown into the path. That's for sure. I hadn't stopped to think about that, but poetry, just like music, comes in all shapes and sizes and colors and moods.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly somebody could be a very gifted poet, but maybe have a predilection for very dark, even kind of troubled poetry versus poetry that's maybe a little more positive and uplifting versus mm-hmm. poetry that's maybe very kind of inscrutable. I mean, hard to kind of sort out and understand versus other poetry that's very sort of direct and clear from the start. And so you have this wide array of possibilities. And I suppose when you're thinking about somebody, as you said, being a match for the community, it's really an interesting choice that faces you.
Mm-hmm. And we've had all kinds of different poets over the years. I think our poetry community in Kenosha and Racine is very rich. We're very fortunate. And same in arts community and general is quite robust here. And we have so many different people with different experiences to inform their work. And I think Deborah and Joe, both of your work, you both have very different styles and different things. You know, everyone draws from their experiences one way or another, right?
Right, absolutely. I'd love to hear from each of you about kind of the process by which you sort of, I guess, maybe threw your hats in the ring for the possibility of becoming the poet laureate of your particular county. Deborah, let's begin with you. I mean, what do you remember about when this possibility first sort of occurred to you?
The possibility occurred to me, and then I had a few people on the board that I was working with poetry on, so they kind of walked me through the process. You know, the selection of the poem so that it is accessible, and the performance at that interview. I think that was a very important part of the coaching that two of the members of the current board expressed to me. So it was, you know, saying, okay, I'm going to apply, I'm going to select poems that, so they see a range, I guess, a range of work that might be more personal or more accessible to the community. And then really preparing that community project, because that was an important thing to the board, that we have a community kind of project that touches people that are sometimes ignored.
Hmm.
So that was a creative kind of thinking to present that. It wasn't what I actually did because of COVID, so I kind of did more of a convenience project where I had kids available at Horlick. So, and then I got some more poetry from students from the other high schools as well to publish on our website. So
very good. Joe Engel, how about you?
Well, actually, you know, I applied three times, so it was three's a charm, I guess. In the third interview, I was able to actually secure the spot. So I say a lot of the same things that Deborah said, you know, poem selection, you know, what are your strongest, what are your most accessible, what are the easiest to take in on a single reading. Yeah, the community project, I think, was a big one. They seem to like the community project a lot. So
right. You know, it's interesting, Jennifer, I hadn't thought about this, but sometimes we think of poets
I mean, they come in all shapes and sizes, of course, and personalities, but sometimes we imagine a poet to be a kind of a solitary figure, you know, writing in silence, and something that is maybe they do it only for them, for themselves, and perhaps cripplingly shy. And of course, your poet laureate needs to be somebody who, in a sense, is comfortable in the public eye and comfortable sharing their poetry publicly, versus someone who just writes in the privacy of their own studio and doesn't even imagine sharing it with the wider world.
Sure. Well, I think you're touching on an important thing, which is that there seems to be a kind of misnomer out there that poetry is inaccessible. And I think you hear that with a lot of arts in general, mm-hmm. right? But it happens, I think, particularly with poetry. And a big piece of the Poet Laureate work and the work of this program is showing how accessible poetry actually is. Like I said, we have so many great poets right here in our own community, and they're writing about things that many of us experience ourselves. It doesn't have to be this walled off thing or something that is so private. And it certainly can be. You know, poetry gives you an opportunity to express the inexpressible, right? Mm. But it also is an opportunity for connection. And we try to highlight really that piece where we can all come together and experience the written word in a new way as a community.
Very good. I want to mention what each of you, that is our two Poets Laureate, what you do for a living. Deborah Hall is a Spanish teacher for the Racine Unified School District. And Joe Engel, you are a custodian for Gateway Technical College on the Burlington campus.
Yep.
I'm curious, how much, if at all, does that work that you do enter into your poetry? I mean, in terms of themes that you explore or in any other way, or by and large is your work as a poet quite distinct from your 9-to-5 job, so to speak? Deborah?
I think mine is integrated. I lived in Costa Rica for a little while, so I bring a lot of stories from living with a family that did not speak English and navigating a foreign country when I was first relearning the language 3 years ago. So I think mine comes in. My students definitely inform my work. They're bringing in all different kinds of perspectives and questions. And then the Spanish. I've done a few translations for some community projects. So that ability to say it in English and Spanish is something I want to continue past my term as the Poet Laureate for Racine.
Very good. How about you, Joe Engel?
I would say that my work definitely informs my writing, sometimes even very directly. I mean, you know, we spend at least 40 hours a week of our lives, you know, 1/3 of our lives we spend at work. So, you know, a lot of the time when I'm searching for material, I can kind of fall back on, what I do at work. So, and, you know, as a custodian over the past 2.5 years during the pandemic, it was very stressful. It was very hard. Hmm. So it gave me quite a few things to touch on in my writing.
Yeah. I was thinking, too, custodians, we don't always remember this, but custodians really probably get to see a lot of things that the rest of us maybe see but don't notice.
Yeah.
And in particular, various interactions and even kind of the world around you and so on, you're in a position where you get to see a lot.
We do. Yeah, we get to observe things. I wasn't going to say that because I didn't know if it was odd or not, but
no, it's true.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, it's like when I got hired, I was told I'm the eyes and ears of the campus. So, yeah. So yeah, I see a lot of things, and I'll read a poem along those lines when that comes up.
Actually, I think we should do that right now.
I would
love to. So, tell us the title of the poem, and maybe if there is anything that will help us sort of take it in and appreciate it, and then go ahead
and share. Okay, sure. It's called Away from College Grounds. I used to smoke, and there was a student who I would see out in the smoking area off college grounds, and he was very quiet. He always kept to himself, and I always, you know, respected his space and whatnot. So here it is. It's called Away from College Grounds. He seems natural near the yellow bucket placed here on the gravel path. A nursing student wearing a field pack embroidered with an Army logo. One puff dallies from his lips, then another. No light in his face, as if scraped away with a butter knife and given to a little brother. I see a sequence of convoys and bullets and landmines, because I want to imagine what caused his melting posture. It could be anything, early mornings, failing marriage, but I choose an image with gauze and clamps and tongs, blood-stained stone. He has tried to cry, but can't, just this ghostly feeling in his hands. I watch him, standing in a way that seems to conceal, discourage approach, and imagine he could set a break on legions of strangers, revive hearts, mold us into health like a bouquet of marble flowers. Years sculpted from the stone, 5, 10, chiseled, non-commissioned Michelangelo. Directives followed smooth as smoke, obscuring his cheeks in the way he scoots aside when I step towards the ash can, how he looks at his footprints and lightly rubs them away.
I love that. Wonderful poem.
Oh, thank you.
What was it called again?
Away from College Grounds.
Away from College Grounds. Yeah. And again, this is very much an example of someone you literally observed from afar.
Right.
And how, in a moment like that, how quickly does it occur to you that there's a poem here waiting to be written?
You know, I think it didn't take until I sat down and thought about it for a second. And that was the moment. You know, for me, at least with this one, it wasn't a shot of inspiration necessarily. It was noticing him over a period of time, basically at the same time every day. I'd take my break, and he'd be out there like on a break of some sort for him. And I just, you know, was just always there with him. But he never acknowledged me. There was never an acknowledgement, you know. And so, yeah, like, it led to speculation. And then, you know, when I sat down probably one evening to write a poem, this is what happened.
Right. So, yeah, just to reiterate, this was not a single encounter, but a repeated encounter. You would see this guy again and again, day
right.
after day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it sounds like doing essentially the same thing day after day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Fascinating. And a beautifully constructed poem.
Oh, thank you.
That's cool. Let's switch over to our Racine Poet Laureate, Deborah Hall. What would you like to share with us right off the bat?
This one is a work that I wrote as a community partnership. They had Uptown had an art walk where they transformed the windows into recycled art. So they had a bunch of artists. I had an artist create this wonderful paper out of recycled paper. And so I wrote this poem for the front of a store, and it's still there. It's entitled Symmetry.
Symmetry.
You carry the shape of a tree inside, each lung a borrowed design of branches. Genius limbs work in tandem. Each arm reaches up as earth exhales, as sunlight strokes your leaves. You pack seed in soil, tight rows, fail to notice that dark water nourishes a city of roots below, a barren acre, a forest you traded for a garden. Remember, it was trees that taught the earth to breathe, each lung a borrowed design of branches.
Oh, wow. I love that. I especially love that phrase about a city of roots below. So I guess you're touching on that whole kind of hidden world that none of us ever think about.
Yes. And she created the paper from trees, so it had a nice, I thought it had a nice match.
Yeah.
So.
No, I absolutely love that. It's an interesting challenge, isn't it, to take something that you are looking at, but that we're not looking at, and to create something that, in a sense, helps us see it.
Yes, yes. Thank you.
Yeah, beautifully constructed. That's great. For those of you just joining us, this morning show today is devoted to poetry, and we are so happy to have two talented and skilled poets with us today, the current Poets Laureate for Kenosha and Racine. Joe Engel is the Kenosha Poet Laureate. Deborah Hall is the Racine Poet Laureate. And also with us in the studio, Jennifer Coslow, who is the president of the Poets Laureate Board of Directors. And their application process is underway right now for new Poets Laureate to be selected for both Kenosha and Racine. Let's hear a second poem from each of you. Joe, what would you like to share with us next?
I'll read a poem called Your Turn.
And anything you want to say about this first?
It's about luck. It's about luck. It's about financial hardship in a way. And I think in another sense, it's it can be applied to broader hardship. So it's about luck and hardship.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Go ahead.
All right. Your turn. Light catches the coins on the floor by the vending machines in the corridor. Don't look around before you take them, before you slide them down the dark throat of your pocket. Remember, when the slot machine swallows them, they were not yours. If you win, it's not money earned. It's just gold dust, deserved. Call your wallet pollinated. This might be your day, rewarded now for how you don't betray people's secrets or ever call in sick. Trust me, we see your smile as the man at the dice table wearing the Yankees hat loses a grand. That's okay, and listen, on your lazy ride home, do not gape at the sight of someone's car burning. Pass the smoke pluming from rubber hoses without looking. Those flames want more than air and night. Do not slow to watch like everyone else. Who knows what luck is? When you arrive at your flat by the harbor and see your landlord's half-sunk dinghy, remember the $10 bill you almost chased into January waves. How you could see it 20 yards out, riding a slab of ice, rising and falling, up and down in the water, and think, before you call about the boat, how you had to let it go.
Hmm. So what prompted that? I mean, because you talk about several different things. Are any of those things you directly observed, or?
No, this was pretty fictive. It's I think we've all been in positions where we're scraping by, and I honestly don't know where I was or where this came from. I'm sure it has to do with many years of, living paycheck to paycheck and whatnot.
Right, so. Right, absolutely, which is a condition that a lot of us have experienced, and some people live their whole lives within that.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And kind of waiting for good luck to descend.
Yeah,
and,
so it's making your own happiness, it's... not being completely dragged down by your own struggle, or I won't call it misfortune necessarily, but your own circumstance.
Right. I was just going to say, thought-provoking poem.
Thanks.
Very good. Deborah Hall, you're next.
All right. Well, a part of being Poet Laureate is you write a poem about your city. So by the time we're done, we have to have a poem done about our city.
Oh, okay.
And so this one I kept kind of personal, but I'm going to own it and hand it in as my Racine poem. It is called Danish Bakery.
Danish Bakery. Okay.
Yes. If we had stayed in another town at the end of a tree-lined street, past the neighbor with a palm reader sign out front, we would have had a different ending. You might be chewing tobacco on the porch now. I might be smoking a blunt in the basement. We would have missed those days of cream-filled middles when you took some time to write a book that was never published, and we ate orange dreamsicles, and you found out who you wanted to be. After you died, I took some time to wander, find out who I wanted to be. I came home to this Danish Kringle town. It's delicate layers of frosting and cake. It's delicious fruit and cream-filled middle.
Ah,
my Racine poem.
It's very Racine, absolutely.
Very Racine.
Yes, but tell us more about the really personal aspect of that poem in terms of who you're talking about.
It is autobiographical. Part of the reason I applied to be Poet Laureate is the chapbook that another poet had given to me as we were going through the same kind of experience. She wrote her chapbook for her deceased lover, and I went to her reading, and a year later I was burying my husband. So this one speaks to me on doing something for someone else all of your life and then coming back and saying, I'm still in this little Danish Kringle town.
Right.
But it's got a soft part that really helped me, and I think being the Poet Laureate really helped me to get my chapbook ready so that maybe when somebody else is going through that, the chapbook helps them.
Now, that's a term I'm not familiar with. Can you explain what that is, a chapbook?
A chapbook is like a group of 15 or 16 poems. You get it published and bound, and then it shows your work. You can use it to apply for other writing positions.
So it's like an artist's portfolio, kind of.
It's kind of like the portfolio, yes. And Erica Foreman's chapbook really helped me through some really dark days. So,
because of what the poems said?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and because she and I contacted each other and kept in touch when I was just new to the grieving process.
Right,
so,
right.
Yes.
Poetry can certainly be a powerful tool in that respect, can't it?
It certainly can, and it was. I mean, she, you know, that chapbook was critical.
Yeah.
And so I didn't leave one behind.
Right, and I guess what I was trying to explore is that it perhaps was important to you in a couple of different ways, not just what those poems were in that chapbook and what those poems said, but
yes.
just seeing somebody having done that.
Yes.
And thinking that's something you could do for yourself.
Right. Because the chapbook has to be a whole process. It can't just be the darkness. And so this is the part where I'm finishing the chapbook.
Mm.
And it is about the resilience and what you come out of it. And this Danish Kringle poem kind of speaks to that kind of frame.
Yeah.
So.
Beautiful, beautiful. We're talking poetry today with our two current Poets Laureate here in southeastern Wisconsin, Deborah Hall, who is the Racine Poet Laureate, and Joe Engel, who is the Kenosha Poet Laureate. We're going to hear a couple of other poems a little bit later, but I think it would be good for us to talk a little bit about, first of all, your own history with poetry in your particular lives. Joe, tell us when you first started to become interested in poetry, either as a reader and or listener versus when it started to occur to you that you might want to create poetry of your own.
Okay. Actually, it started out for me with journaling when I was younger, when I was about 19. And what kept happening when I would journal is it would come out in a very poetic format. And that kept happening over and over, and I thought it was really fun, and I would end up playing with the words and whatnot. But for me, actually, writing poetry came before reading poetry. I hadn't, you know, read any poetry since high school, and after several months of writing poems, these kind of essentially unsuccessful. You know, I wouldn't want anybody to see these poems that I wrote back then. But I then started reading poetry, and it kind of became what it is now. And, I sought out, I took a few creative writing classes. I had a creative writing class at Parkside with Carl Lindner, and it was amazingly helpful. It was extraordinarily helpful. And I realized in that class that maybe I can do something. Maybe I'm okay at this.
Huh. So just so I understand, you're writing of poetry, in a sense, began almost accidentally. It sprang out of your journaling, that you realized you were journaling in sort of poetic fashion.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what do you mean by that? I mean, because I'm sure it wasn't, you know, there once was a boy named Billy. I mean, it wasn't poetic in that simplest sort of way. In what way are you using that term poetic, that your journaling was poetic?
So when I was, you know, trying to jot down my thoughts and my experiences, you know, at the time, I found myself, you know, using metaphor and symbolism, you know, and various abstractions of one kind or another, you know. And I was even writing it in like a poetic style. I was using lines. I was, you know, using 3, 4, 5, 6 words instead of like writing in a journal style. And I was really having a lot more fun with it, you know. I mean, it was still useful and therapeutic, you know, but it was coming out in a poetic format. Don't know why.
Yeah, that's really cool. But I mean, how wonderful that you ended up, in a sense, kind of stumbling into this almost accidentally.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really great. Deborah Hall, how about you? I mean, when did you first start to become interested in poetry, either as a reader or as a creator of poetry? And did those happen successively or simultaneously? I mean,
I think I wrote my first poem at age 10, and my grandma had it up on her refrigerator until she moved to assisted living.
Oh, boy.
It was very simple, but then it was always something that I loved, how it was so there, just there. And I mean that by the metaphor is how my brain works. And so the poems were like always food, because the metaphor is where I could get to the heart of any issue. So in grad school, it came out really specifically where I took a class, rhetorical analysis. We were doing metaphors. And I loved writing the papers. And I asked the professor, can I get a job like doing this? Because this is my brain.
Ah.
And she said, you know, it's basically poetry or it's rhetoric, you know, speech writing or whatever, because metaphors are embedded in our language and they are so powerful. And it was nice to finally understand that that's how my brain is wired.
Huh.
So.
Very good. You teach Spanish for the Racine Unified School District.
Yes.
Have you ever written poetry in Spanish?
I started doing a few translations. My symmetry poem is in Spanish, and I'm going to continue to do some translations. Pablo Neruda, I read him in English and Spanish, and a few other poets. So I read it and understand it, so I might. But there's a whole other skill set in translation. It's not just what it says.
Right. Oh, exactly. So, I understand that perfectly. Yes. As someone involved in classical music singing, I mean,
yes. It's
kind of like when you have a song written in a foreign language and to transfer that into an English translation that is true to the original yet
yes. True
to the music. It's not a simple
layer. Yeah. So I think I'll be a big fan, like Joe's kind of progression of reading it first and then see how well I can do with the vocalisms and the word meanings.
Yeah, very good. It'd be great to hear a little bit about the process for each of you. And I guess, you know, maybe you can fold into it what it's like to be a poet as a poet laureate, because maybe that has changed your process some, in the sense that, I mean, it sounds like at least some of the poetry you're writing during your term is, in a sense, on command. I mean, as part of your responsibilities as poet laureate versus the poems you just write when you're walking around and a lightning bolt strikes you. So, Joe, how would you describe your process as a poet?
Well, I would say that, you know, my poems happen in different ways. Sometimes it's a line. lately it's been a line more than anything. And sometimes at work, the line has come to me, so it's really convenient to have the notes feature on my phone, you know, on a break or whatever, to, you know, type in a line or two. But it can be an image. It can be a feeling. It can be a memory. As far as the process goes, I revise a lot. You know, I have a newer poem in here that I went through 20 or 31 revisions of. So that was,
wow.
Yeah, that's over the course of probably a week or so. So the process that, you know, the first draft comes out in different ways. It can come out, like you said, like a bolt of lightning. Sometimes it just strikes you and you can just, it just kind of rushes out of you. And there are other times when I am actually like correcting lines as I go along, you know, and being a lot more deliberate, or where I write, you know, a quarter of the poem, a third of the poem, and have feel like it might have some potential, and then set it down, you know, and come back to it later the next day or whatever. So, so it varies for me at the process.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Deborah Hall? What is, generally speaking at least, the process by which you are able to create a poem, or is there that just impossible to generalize?
No, I think I had a process before I was poet laureate. So it's usually doing morning pages and then going back and saying, wow, that was in my head that morning. Because you just get up out of bed and you don't drink coffee. You just write 3 or 4 pages. And then you go back and you collect the thoughts. But being poet laureate, we do a lot of, in Racine, we do a lot of collaboration with the Racine Arts Council. So I have had to write poems about things, which is not the way I usually do it. Mm. But I have this handy dandy little book, The Crafty Poet's Guide. And there's usually something in there from the prompt to the writer's process that I can kind of understand where they're going and their implicit or inherent skills, and I use that a lot because I have to turn something around usually in a week or two, and it's like, okay. So it's a very good book, huh. And it has helped me through my term.
Yeah, and I should think that's very intimidating to, in a sense, have an assignment to that you need to write a poem about X.
Yes,
and of course you want it to be good.
Yes. So it helps. It helps because you can see, like, I probably, if I was relying on those morning pages, I might get monotonous in my style or my frame. But the Crafty Poet Guide, it helps to step out of that and do list poetry or humorous poetry or just all kinds. So yeah. It's very good. I think there's 36 different things you can do, and it was very helpful.
Oh. I'm curious to hear from each of you. Joe, I'll start with you. If the creation of your poetry, the crafting of your poetry, is a fairly solitary exercise, or if there is somebody that you bounce your poetry off of in order to have that kind of external feedback, or does it not work that way for you?
It is a solitary exercise, but, you know, after I work the poem into some shape that I'm, you know, at the very least, like, slightly satisfied with. I love to send it out to people. I have a few people that I send my work to, and I trust their responses. The process is definitely a solitary thing. And the initial, like, sculpting of the poem is as well a solitary thing. And I can trust myself, you know, to know, like, when a poem is decent or, you know, relatively okay. And then from there, I have to have an. I need an. Like, so from there, I'll send it to somebody, you know, for their thoughts. And I think it's really important to have the audience response or feedback or reaction.
And I'm just curious, if someone were to come back with some kind of point of constructive criticism, what would that typically be? Would it be that I don't know what you're saying here, or this poem's too long, or this poem's too short, or
yeah, it could be. It could be that I don't know what you're saying here. This is unclear. it could be, hey, you're touching it. You know, this is a little overdone here. This is a little cliche. I get comments about punctuation, which I kind of ignore.
Punctuation is personal.
Exactly. Right. Don't just talk about my punctuation.
Right. Okay. Deborah Hall, how about you? Are there people you share your poetry with, or is this also for you, at least at the outset, a solitary enterprise?
I think it's more like Joe, where it's very individual and solitary in the beginning, and then we look for audiences.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah. And then audiences to give maybe a draft, like after I have a couple of drafts, they can give me feedback, and then our ultimate audience is to take it out to the community.
Right. So. Is it hard when you have crafted something that comes from your soul and then have somebody come back and say, I don't get this? I ask because, you know, poetry seems like an exceptionally personal means of artistic expression, and I think it's not always easy to have somebody react with any kind of negativity to something that springs right out of your heart.
You want to speak to that first?
No, you know, not really. Not really. You know, 20 years ago, yeah, probably.
Now you have a hard shell, huh?
I have more confidence in what I do. So, right. Yeah.
How about you, Deborah?
I think that's similar. Like, if they say they don't understand it, I have stuff that I didn't spend a lot of time on that's very accessible. And a greater amount of people can access it. And then there's stuff that just says, this is mine, and I like it, and I don't care.
Yeah, there you go. I like that. Let's hear a couple more poems from each of you. Joe, let's begin with you.
Okay. This is called Middle Years. I wrote the first three quarters of this poem at Common Grounds. It came out really easily. And the last, one quarter of the poem I worked on for years, a very long time.
All right. Middle Years.
Yes. I drink decaf at a diner dizzy with the young, some whose pimples set a precedent for their thoughts, explorers starving and humbled in a passage of volcanic peaks, and some so old that soup is target conversation. From the axis of this carousel, I watch the youth ride their horses up and down as the seniors ride the outer benches smiling. If there's a god, he's a draft that blows on every cup here and takes no action to save the young from what they choose. DUIs on a county road, pines blurring past, or undergrad expulsion. The elders know too much to say life is easy. But sweet onions, navy beans, and garlic bring levity to twilight and a weight to what gets lived. The understanding that there are one or two who wander untouched, like white flags in wind, gazing down as berated children would. Don't become them, they would say, and I might say, take the risk. But sunshine is strengthened by the spirit here, and since I am somewhere, it cuts time like lines of crushed Adderall. Shines clear focus through a room where it feels safe to leave my laptop at the table. A room white with eyes like stars coming down. So I would like to ask them about their schedule for sleep. If their moments of waking always trump their dreams, like warm air on a beach where they bury their toes and nod to the open water where they weathered the surging cold. And notice the young run to the water like it is the dream. Embraced before a shift of clearing tables. They sprint from towels that hold their forms in sand, and I stand in a prairie of parking lot weeds. A barista's laugh brings me back to my table in time to find a tip hidden in my wallet's throat. Besides small pictures and cards, I keep like tokens to a fair submerged beneath the wave's white foam.
Well, that's another one. All kinds of things are packed in there, springing out of a very ordinary moment in your life, in a sense.
Right. Yes, very much so.
Right. Yeah. And I would never guess that there was some stopping point and a point of, I don't know, creative crisis is overstating it, but I mean, That just feels like a one flowing poem.
Oh, good.
Yeah, good. Very good. Deborah Hall, what would you like to read for us?
This one is entitled Last Rites. Last Rites. I didn't recognize the priest as he walked up the driveway in a soccer shirt and Adidas pants. Be not afraid. I'm here to give your mother the last rites, he said. It was 10:30 at night. I saw something in his eyes, as if he'd found a fruit tree in the desert, as if he once arranged chairs around a table where he was the main course. And I let him in the house, followed his prompts, called to old saints, words to thatch a nest, a respite for her long flight, as she labored in breath, a rattle in the lungs, as she primped her wings and found a way out.
Wow. Oof,
that
powerful.
One's personal. Dude.
Of course. Wow. I just lost my dad just over a month ago. And I think 6 months ago I would have heard that poem and just liked it on a whole different level. But when people have been where you were, you know, you're speaking very deeply to that experience. That's a beautiful poem.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry about
yeah,
your dad.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So finally, Joe. One more.
Sure. Okay.
We don't have a ton of time, so.
Okay. All right. I'll keep it short. Mm-hmm. This is a newer one. It's called Diffusing at the Laundromat. Nobody knows my flesh is an aviary of opposing species but me. An osprey clutches my heart. Canaries light on my ribs. The rest of my body is a hot and geothermal world, bubbling mud, boiling water. I expel the raptor from its grip. With steam, I silently breathe. It flies, visualized, released. No patrons dive onto the tile or shove their children into the shelter of washing machines. Nobody sees it swoop around the ceiling fan and glide between the dry cleaning, with its lust for upper branches and drafts over pines lining a lake. After a turn past the vending machine, it meets the pane glass window and breaks into nothing but dust in the sunlight. Nobody saw it soar towards those cumulus clouds and maple trees, while those canaries chitter and flit from rib to rib, enlivened as I exhale and transfer my colors to the dryer on recommended levels of heat.
Lovely. Fun. I like that a lot. Deborah, to finish things out.
This one is called My New Boudoir. Last Christmas, you gave me a gift that took more courage than most. So you poured a large glass of wine, gave me copies of product ratings because you couldn't guess how I might react. I read what others had to say and asked you why I was reading this. The arch of your eyebrows flattened. I could tell you wanted to back away, to take it back, to unplan the whole thing. I went to bed still confused about the gift. The next morning, you said you thought I didn't like it, and I didn't know what to say. But I understand now, as time passes, it wasn't something I choose for myself, and the gift itself was only a means to an end, to write my own body of intimate knowledge in my own words, to organize the chapter, place the page, hold the pen, define myself.
Another personal poem, very for personal. Sure. Wow, for sure. And that desire to unplan something we regret speaks to a lot of us, I think. Wow, what wonderful work from both of you. This is absolutely great. It kind of reaffirms, doesn't it, Jennifer, the point of having Poets Laureate and opportunities for them to share.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like I said, we have a lot of really great local poetry, and these two are fantastic, and I think just the tip of the iceberg.
Right. So for someone who thinks maybe they would like to apply to be Poet Laureate, what do they do?
Yes. So we actually have a website. It's www.krpoets.com. So it's KRPOETS.com. And there is an apply tab there that has all of the information that you need to apply. There are print applications as well as an online application. And anyone who is interested in print can also pick up a print application at Kenosha Public Library or Racine Public Library. And yeah, applications need to be turned in by October 15th, so there's plenty of time to workshop those poems.
Very good, very good. And the website one more time?
www.krpoets.com.
Very good. Jennifer Koslow is president of the Poets Laureate Board of Directors, and Joe Engel and Deborah Hall, the two current Poets Laureate. Thank you to all three of you for a really fun morning show, and best wishes to you.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.